Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, 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 Just the Freedom Listening Family. This is your host, Jamal Brown. Today is Sunday, May 15th. As many of you know, I am the creator of the 365 Days of Black Facts calendar, and the Black Fact of the day is psychiatrist and author Alvin Poussat was born on this day in East Harlem, New York, the year 1934. Mr. Poussat was a noted professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and authored a large number of books on child psychiatry, particularly with a focus on how to raise African-American children. I cannot move forward without giving a special shout-out to the show's producer, Ms. Leslie Gist, author. You will see her product, her book, right alongside my calendar and a number of museums in the northeast region of the country here coming up soon. As always, listening family, we have a fantastic guest on the line with us today. All of our shows here at the Gist of Freedom Radio are thought-provoking, make you scratch your temple sometimes, make you say, and have the potential to be explosive. And this caller I have on the line and the topic we will be discussing certainly fits that bill. I have on the line with me right now Mr. Stephen Yeager. Mr. Yeager wears a number of hats. He's a school teacher, he's a memorabilia collector, and he owns a large number of vintage interracial family photographs. We'll be speaking with Mr. Yeager here for the next half hour and find out a little bit more about him, what got him into collecting and in the collecting business, and what's his motivation for collecting this type of photography, who his typical buyer is, and all in between. Mr. Yeager, are you on the line with us?
Yes. How you doing, Jamal?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Well, I have a patented question here at the Gist of Freedom Radio Show, that question being, who is Stephen Yeager? Who is Stephen Yeager? If you can give us a profile briefly, well, I'd appreciate that.
Well, I see myself as just an ordinary person who likes to experience lots of different things. One of the things I love to do is travel.
Awesome. Travel and collect things, am I correct?
Correct.
All right. Tell us about some of the things that you've collected and again, some things that stick out to you. And, yeah, give us a profile of your collection, if you will.
I've collected stamps, coins, books, cars, photography, antiques, just a little bit of everything.
Awesome. And one thing I noted in how did you meet our show's producer, Ms. Leslie Gist?
I met her at a Black Memorabilia show in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Okay, awesome. That was not that long ago, am I correct?
Correct.
Awesome. What were some of the products you had on display and available for sale that day?
I actually was just there to buy. I wasn't there to sell.
Okay. Well, did you pick up any pieces there?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, no. What happened?
Uh, there wasn't anything that really caught my fancy.
Okay,
and that sometimes
okay.
happens, especially when you have a large collection.
I hear you. Was there anything that you were there looking for in particular?
More photographs, more interesting photographs. I did see one, but again, the price was more than I wanted to spend.
Okay, okay. I'm glad you brought up that topic of photographs. Tell us more about these your photograph collection, and particularly, let's head in the direction of the interracial ones that that you have an affinity for collecting.
It's not so much that I have an affinity for interracial ones. I just find that often they're more interesting, especially the ones that are not the stereotypical ones.
Okay, they're rare. Am I correct in thinking so? Just finding old interracial photographs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But I also have several early photographs from Africa, and if I can find those, I also try and collect those.
Okay. Awesome. These ones from Africa, what do they depict? And give some details. Do you only go to shows to pick these things up, or do you go to garage sales, estate sales?
I go all over the place. I've picked them up on my travels. I picked up some in England. I've picked up some in Africa. And wherever I go in the United States, I look for them.
Okay.
But the ones from Africa, I picked up two in England. One of an Ashanti chief and his tribal members, and then a second one was of women in Ghana grinding some sort of grain, and there's nothing in the picture that's manufactured. Everything is handmade.
Awesome, awesome. That's beautiful. Let's get back to these interracial photos. They sort of caught my attention here. I was speaking offline real briefly with our show's producer, Miss Leslie Gist, and she was telling me about one particular photo that caught her eye, that of a black man with a white woman touching him on the lap. Could you give us a better description of that photo and a little bit of background on that one?
That one's probably a late 1800s, and it was one that caught my eye because it's a black male surrounded by a number of white women, two of whom have their arms wrapped around his knees.
Hmm.
And he happens to be in the center of the picture, so he's the focus.
He's somebody of importance, certainly.
Yeah, and also there seems to be some sort of affection between the women and this gentleman. Possibly he was a teacher, although, again, that would go against the stereotype of, you know, that time period.
Interesting. Interesting stuff here. Had you, were you able to get that photo appraised? Do you know anything about the value of that one?
No, I most of the people who do the appraisals don't have any more idea as to the worth than I do.
Okay.
Because I, anytime you buy a lot, you have a pretty good, or you should have a pretty good idea of the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Got it. Where did you come about that photo?
I don't remember. I go to so many different shows and that I don't remember. I have just of African American and interracial photographs. I've probably got over 1,000 photos.
Wow. Wow, wow. Tell us about some more of those interracial photos, ones that I guess sort of have some nearness and dearness to your heart, and ones that stick out to you. And just give us a little background. We have about 20, 21 minutes here before our half hour is up. So, yeah, we have the ability to go into some depth on, you know, on some of these subjects here.
Well, one of my favorites is I have an interracial baseball team probably taken about 1870, 1880. And the reason that that kind of piqued my interest at first was that I kept on hearing that Jackie Robinson was the first person of color to integrate baseball. And I kept hearing that. And then when I saw this photograph, it was like, how do we have a photograph from the 1800s of an interracial baseball team?
Now, that was a Major League Baseball team?
Well, I took it to one of the shows and met one of the players from the Negro League, and I asked him about it. And he said prior to 1890, professional teams were integrated. And what would happen is the professional teams would travel around the country and play local teams, and the local teams would want to have their best players no matter what because they wanted to win.
Right.
And in this picture, the black man is the tallest and the broadest in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably was a pretty good athlete.
Right. Right, right, right. I, as a, you may not know, am a definite student of history. For a large portion of my life, been studying, reading, researching, attempting to manifest the best of what I call African history or black history. And I, too, have come across that notion that Jackie Robinson was, in fact, not the first black player. We have players like Moses Fleetwood Walker and a number of others who, you know, have a partial claim to fame. Going back to the interracial photos, just real quickly, what is your typical buyer profile for these photos? Who likes these type of photos? Who's into them? And who is your number one purchaser, if you could put a profile of your buyer?
I don't sell a lot of the interracial photos. I collect them. I sell mostly other photos that I think are less interesting. But I, among the people who have bought from me, are other collectors and other dealers. A lot of times, I would say the people who buy them are white, and especially back in the 80s, which was the heyday of collecting, and that is because in order to collect, you have to have you know, money that you can part with. And not money that you need for necessities.
Right.
So, and like you said, some of these things can be pricey.
Got it. The photos that individuals collect, if you had to put them in a category of them depicting negative or positive images, what category would most of your selling items sort of fit in? Some of the ones that are happy and smiling ones, or some of, you know, of African people, black people in jest, if you will. What category? You know, these Sambo, Piccaninny, and Aunt Jemima type ones, or are they more you know, positive, empowering
most
images?
Most of the ones I would say that I have are on the positive side.
Awesome.
First of all, it was not cheap to have your picture taken in the 1800s.
Certainly.
So most of the people who were photographed were in positive light, although I do have some, especially where there's a white child and a black person in the picture. Those tend to have less positive images, although I do have some. I have one of a painting of a group of about five children, and in the center of the picture is a black woman. Now, especially a painting, the painter could have put anybody in the picture. Now, why he didn't put the mother and why he put this black female, I can't answer. I can just tell you I think it's a very interesting photo.
Interesting indeed. Tell me this, what sort of feedback or contribution of thought have you gotten from your buyers as to their motivation for buying, I'm talking about your white buyers now, buying these photos portraying or collecting images of black people? What sort of thing does the buyer tell you when they're purchasing your items as their motivation for purchasing?
Not much, because it shows when you are selling, you're pretty busy. My motivation for buying these is I'm a teacher, and I was teaching.
What subject do you teach?
I taught social studies.
Oh, interesting.
And especially in the 70s, I'm a special education teacher, and I taught in the 70s, and the students with the most emotional problems in New York City, the school I taught at, you had to be rejected by every single school in all of New York before you got placed there.
Let me guess, most of your students are black?
The majority of them, yes. And
okay.
Then I taught in Baltimore City at, there were four alternative high schools. I taught at the high school of, last resistance. And most of the students I taught were the worst kids in that school. I've taught gang members and kids who had to have adults walk around with them one-on-one all day long because of their violent tendencies.
Wow.
And then when you are working with those kids and you're trying to teach them subject matter and they're reading all of these negative images of, people who they can best associate with, that doesn't give them a real desire to learn history.
Certainly not. There's been a number of studies that have been published throughout the years, even one this year, associating the images that one sees and has around them with self-esteem and even with happiness. This one out of Michigan State actually came out in April. I cited it heavily as I was a key speaker at a conference not that long ago, and talking about how when children see images that are positive and uplifting and empowering, literally their happiness increases.
So what I tried to do was I was buying these images and trying for the more positive ones so that and then I would bring them in and tell the students, okay, this was taken during this time period.
Mm-hmm.
What can you write about this person or these people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, make up your own history. And
awesome.
Their history was as good as anything that was written in the books because they didn't have an attitude going in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the authors of the books have their own opinions before they write the books, and they write the books and take the pictures based on, what their attitude is.
I believe it was Marcus Garvey who taught us that all things are politics. Something simple as a textbook definitely oftentimes is written with some sort of political or personal agenda in it. And I think that statement that you just made sort of corresponds with that. What do you think about the history books as depictions versus your own collection of images in your collecting experience in terms of, I guess, depth and brevity and, scope? Variation of photos that are used oftentimes in textbooks versus what is out there and available.
I think they pick just a few of the well-known, like Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth. They don't get into all of the other images, and they don't. They don't look for images that might be different, that might go against the stereotypical images. And that's one of the things that made my collecting so interesting. And Leslie and I were talking about this yesterday, how many different things I've learned about race and about people. To give you an example, that baseball image that I have, in showing it around, I learned that there were four women who played in the Negro Leagues.
Wow.
I learned that Major League Baseball, was actually integrated before Jackie Robinson. It was just not what we call the Major Leagues today. It was Major League Winter Ball.
Okay,
was integrated. So there was so much more to learn, and a lot of that information is available, but no one shares it because it doesn't present the information that we all learn and that we all pass on.
Right, right, right.
That's what happens a lot with history teachers. We pass on what we've learned.
Certainly, certainly. Give us just a couple more examples of some just interesting factoids in Black history that you've come across and learned. This is my favorite subject on the planet, so I can talk about this all day. Certainly we want to move on to a few of the topics here. But, again, some just interesting things in history, some revisionist history that you've come across and, you know, sort of peeled back the layer and found, you know, some nuggets of truth in. And, again, some things that have piqued your interest in Black history, if you will.
Okay, well, first, before I get into that, Dr. Poussaint, I'd also like to mention, presented positive images. He was with Dr. Bill Cosby in producing The Cosby Show.
Hmm.
Okay, which was, I thought, one of the funniest and best programs ever produced.
Right, right. And again, Dr. Poussaint from the Black Fact of the Day that I mentioned at the top of the show, correct?
Correct.
All right, got it.
And then in terms of information, when I was in Ghana,
mm-hmm.
I happened to be very fortunate. I stayed with families that were from Ghana, and their opinions, their information about slavery was very different than what you learn in books.
Really? Tell me about it. I've done a little bit of research on this topic as well, so I'd definitely be interested in hearing what you say next.
Well, first of all, my friend from Ghana, his father had an office in the slave castle in Cape Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went there with him, it was the feelings you got were some of the worst feelings I've ever had in my life.
I haven't been there, but I've been told that the English language isn't expansive enough to provide words to adequately describe the feeling that one gets once they enter those walls.
I couldn't describe it, but I can tell you that the odor that comes from the place is
let me stop you right there, Stephen. I know why I would want to go there. Tell me why you, as a Caucasian American, would want to go and visit such a place.
It's historical.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend had his father or grandfather had an office in that building. And I felt the need to see where. I hate when people separate Black history and white history. It's American history.
Yeah, and world history, certainly.
And world history. And this was all part of it. And this, it contributes to the way each and every one of us interacts with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see this place for myself and understand, and I remember driving back from this place with my friend who has lived in the United States for about 50 years now, and we've been friends for 40-some-odd years, but his family is from Ghana, and I remember on the way back, we stopped, and we were talking, and it was like, if we lived back then, how would we have dealt with slavery?
Mm.
And, I thought about myself and what I would hope I would have been like, and I just felt like I couldn't, have been a part of such a horrendous undertaking that I would have hoped that, my 150-year-old or 200-year-old self would have stood up and said something about it and fought it in whatever way I could.
I appreciate that. Being hypothetical or theoretical, as only we could speak on a topic at this point. Let me ask you a quick question. We have had a historic event not that long ago, that being the ascension to the White House by Mr. President Barack Obama. What sort of your take on an African-American, an African, part American individual ascending to such a position here in this country?
I thought it was a wonderful event, but I, as I told Leslie yesterday, I don't like the way the press portrays him as the first black president. He's actually the first interracial president, and you know, to when the press gives him this title, I think they're misnaming him. I don't know that he likes it. I would assume his mother would totally disagree with it and object to it.
Why do you say his mother? Because of the fact that she's African, period, as opposed to African-American? Excuse me, his mother is being Caucasian, excuse me.
Right, because his mother is Caucasian, and why would her heritage be denied?
Mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling on that is it goes back to the idea of slavery and how if you had, the unions that you had, even though they were not consensual, the children from those unions were never considered to be white. They were always considered to be black.
Right.
Which is making them, especially back then, second-class citizens. And why would you do that, in this case, to the president? Why don't you acknowledge his true heritage? The stuff about Hawaii and whether his birth certificate, that's just craziness.
I hear you loud and clear. Let me ask you this. I recently heard someone say if Barack Obama, before he was President Barack Obama, was stopped in a car and black people in there, white people in there, Asian people, Mexican people, and they say, black people, put up your hands and come out. Do you think it would be appropriate for Mr. Obama to get out the car at that point? Or should he protest and say, I'm African and I'm American and I'm Hawaiian and all that sort of stuff?
I'm interested
to get your take.
I just don't like that whole idea. For the police to stop anybody because of racial issues, I've always had a problem with that. So I don't know how to answer that question.
Got it. As a tag along to that, Ms. Leslie says, if he was a serial killer, would you make the distinction between again a black guy or an interracial guy? I imagine. Yeah.
Right.
Got it.
And I think the same thing with Tiger Woods.
Hmm.
You know, if you look at Tiger Woods, he's not. When you call him the first black golfer or the first black champion golfer, you're denying his mother's heritage. You know.
I hear you.
And now, on the other hand, if they called themselves that, I don't have a problem. It's only when the press calls them that. If they feel like their heritage is black and not interracial or not white or not Asian, that's fine with me. But I don't think the press should have the power to label somebody as to what they are.
I hear you. Okay, switching reels real quick. We have about 2 minutes left. I was just curious to know, have you read, being a student of history, what have you, read President Obama's book, either of the books that he has authored and put out there?
No, but I have read a little bit of Dr. Poussin wrote.
Okay.
because of my special education background and dealing with minority students. I think his take is very important for teachers, and I think that many teachers have not read books by people like Dr. Poussin. And, you know, I think we need to. I think we need to know our students and know what their needs are and focus our educational system on them, not on subject matter, but more on how can I make the student a better learner? How can I make the student learn what they want to learn, which will help them in the future? I think, unfortunately, that the educational system has turned off many students, and therefore we're not getting the best power for our buck.
I hear you loud and clear. I must say that I agree with that statement. Hey, look, we're running towards the end of our time. Oh, Miss Gist sent me over a factoid real quick, saying that in one of the books about the president, he indicates that he told his mother to not call him Barry, but to call him Barack, as a protest, if you will, of not recognizing his Africanness, and you know, didn't want that, you know, so much of a Eurocentric name associated with him. I personally did not know that. And Miss Leslie says that it's a great read, and she would recommend it to you. Again, we're coming up to the near the end of our show. Do you have any events that are upcoming that you would like to let us know about?
No, I'm going to be traveling. That's the only event for me coming up. But in March, I will be putting on a photo show in New York City.
Okay.
If anybody wants, my website is www.usphotoshows.com.
Give that one more time for us, and we'll wrap it up after that.
www.usphotoshows.com.
Mr. Yeager, I must thank you very much for sharing your time, your energy, and your information with us this afternoon. It was certainly a pleasure of mine, and I hope that perhaps we can get you back on and we can discuss some of those photos and that Ghana trip and some other things at a later date.
Thank you, and thank Ms. Gist for me.
Thank you very much. Well, Gist of Freedom audience members, thanks again for tuning in. It was my pleasure to serve you, and look for me coming up this Thursday with another fantastic guest, 3:30 on the West, 6:30. I'm getting my times all mixed up. That's 5 o'clock here on the West and 8 o'clock there on the East. Thursday, Gist of Freedom radio show. Thank you very much. Good night.
We need to survive.